The court, we have one case this morning, United States v. Gonzalez. Captain Creighton, are you prepared to argue on behalf of appellant? And Captain Nguyen, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government? Very well then, please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson. Members of the court, and may it please the court. Appellant requests 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. It would not be clear to a person of ordinary intelligence that an extramarital kiss is an act forbidden and subject to criminal sanction. The UCMJ specifically prescribes certain extramarital acts. A kiss is not one of those. And the inclusion of some is the exclusion of others. Further, fair notice is an act prohibited, can be found in numerous places, including the MCM, federal law, state law, military case law, as well as customs and regulations of the service. An extramarital kiss is not prescribed by any of those either. And the government concedes this point on page 9 of their brief, quote, an extramarital kiss, extramarital kisses are not specifically enumerated in the MCM, and without more may not be sufficient for an Article 133. As such, appellant was not on fair notice that an extramarital kiss was forbidden and subject to criminal sanction.
What if it had been simulated sexual intercourse? That's not listed.
Your Honor,
it was done in public?
Yes, Your Honor. And there are certain factors that a trial court may take into account when talking about fraternization. But because the government chose to charge using a grab bag approach, they utilized elements of both fraternization and extramarital sexual conduct. They had to be able to prove each element. And again, because a kiss or simulated sex, in Your Honor's hypothetical, are not prescribed by the extramarital sexual conduct under Article 134, appellant would still be not on notice that that act would be forbidden.
So if an officer in the United States Army is in public, he's married, the person is not his wife, and he's simulating sexual intercourse, no problem, not conduct unbecoming?
Your Honor, in this particular example, that could be conduct unbecoming had the government charged it in that particular way. Unfortunately, in this case, the government did not do so, or fortunately in perhaps our client's case, because they utilized, again, both fraternization language and extramarital language, and they were married to those. And if so, the simulation of sex in this particular case would have had to have been an element that they could have proven under Article 134 for the extramarital sexual conduct. And though it might be open and notorious, it still would not be violative of the extramarital sexual conduct.
So, counsel, you noted that the government utilized these two, and you said they were married to it, but at least in three instances in the record, it is clear that all parties agreed that the theory was fraternization and that this was essentially a fraternization charge. And at no time did defense ever object to that. So the in light of that, Would you agree that the appellant was on notice that at least the government's theory behind this charge was fraternization?
Yes, Your Honor. I do believe that trial counsel alluded to fraternization throughout the trial. Absolutely. However, they also alluded to extramarital sexual conduct. And we see that on JA 19, for instance, which is from the very birth of trial at the Article 32 hearing, where they referenced him being a married person and that Seaman JT was not his wife. So trial counsel was reliant on the extramarital sexual portions as well as the fraternization. And so when we're talking about notice, Your Honor, because if trial counsel was going to charge it utilizing an enumerated offense theory, i.e., they were utilizing fraternization only, they would have to utilize that charge only. Hopefully I'm being clear, Your Honor. They can't then also amalgamate the extramarital sexual conduct charge as well. So whether they were reliant on it as a theory That's not necessarily indicative of notice, because the act, the extramarital kiss, appellant was not on notice that that act was forbidden and subject to criminal sanction.
Counsel, may I ask you a question about notice, which is, when we try to answer the granted question about notice, do we look at what happened at trial, or do we just look at the language of the specification? In your reply brief, you mentioned, well, that may be what the specification says, but throughout the trial, they kept mentioning that he was a married man and he was not married to the recipient of the kiss. Do we look at anything that happened at trial, or do we just look at the specification and say, would an officer know that this was criminal just looking at this specification without regard to anything that was said at trial?
Yes, Your Honor. It is just the charging language itself. Appellant utilizes the theory throughout trial to paint the picture, but as this is a question of fair notice, it's purely about the charging decision and the charging language from the government.
And why isn't this just aggravated fraternization as opposed to somehow making a, you know, a Frankenstein combination of fraternization and extramarital conduct? Why isn't it just, this is fraternization and these are some facts that made it worse?
Yes, Your Honor. Appellant is not suggesting that government couldn't use some type of aggravating language in different charges. However, in this particular case, the trial counsel made the extramarital portions elements of the crime. And we see that in the judge's instructions in JA 146, and we see that in trial counsel's closing slides.
But again, we're not looking at anything that happened at trial. We're just looking at the specification.
Yes, Your Honor. The extramarital the extramarital kiss became an element that the government was charging. It was not an aggravator. And we don't tend to see aggravation in cases such as this. We see aggravation when it comes to, say, like a firearm offense, Your Honor, where that would include an enhanced sentence. In RCM 307, the President's guidance is that you don't charge two different crimes in one specification, Your Honor. And so when trial counsel, in utilizing this language, brought in elements from the extramarital sexual conduct, it became more than just an enhanced fraternization. They added those elements. I think the best way to think about it, Your Honor, would be a pyramid where the terminal element, as it were, of an Article 133 is it has to be unbecoming. But below that is whether or not government could prove each element of the underlying offense. And an extramarital kiss became an element, and they could not prove that would be subject to criminal sanction.
Counsel, but if they had been married and this had been a fraternization charge, wouldn't that have defeated the fraternization charge?
It would have.
So maybe the government puts that in the specification on their fraternization theory to say that this is really fraternization. They're not married. So the fact that we have an officer and a enlisted engaging in this conduct wouldn't be defeated by the fact that they were married. Why wouldn't that be a perfectly plausible reason for including the fact that they're not married in the specification?
It could be, Your Honor. However, when government moves to charge an accused, I have never seen, though that's personal, the utilization of a defense-type language in charging decisions where the government is trying to get ahead and say, well, it's not a defense because they weren't married. As well, because the language became elements of the charge, one, that he was married to somebody else and she was not his spouse, it became elements rather than a defense, Your Honor. And so it's not so much the government trying to preempt the defense. They were reliant on
it. But other than – what difference does that make other than increasing their burden of what they had to prove at trial? They had to prove that he was married. They had to prove that the other person was not his wife. So, sure, they put that in the specification, then they're bound by it and they have to prove it. But that doesn't necessarily implicate a different offense, does it?
Rather than – if Your Honor would permit, it's if we trailer that a little bit farther than fair notice per se, if we go into what the panel would be reliant on in terms of what conduct would be conduct unbecoming, we are unaware of whether they would be reliant on purely the fraternization or whether there was the because he was married to somebody else, whether that was the conduct unbecoming. And so then when we come back out of that at the 10,000-foot viewer, to Judge Meg's point, the initial charging language, appellant would not be on notice that purely an extramarital kiss is not subject to criminal sanction. And in United States versus Livingstone, this court affirmed the Coast Guard case when it says, when we are looking at Article 133 specifically, this court must look to the specific act that the government is charging as to whether appellant would have fair notice. And it's not the context of it, to your point, Your Honor, about the theory that the government is putting forth or the facts surrounding it. Judge Hardy, as you're talking about the defenses, we're looking specifically at the act itself. And in this case, it's an extramarital kiss. And because that is not prescribed anywhere in the UCMJ nor in any other place in the MCM, federal or state case law, or any other custom or regulation of the service, the extramarital kiss, that act in and of itself, appellant could not be on fair notice that that act was forbidden.
But counsel, looking at the specification, is it merely the extramarital kiss, or is it the fact that that extramarital kiss was done with a junior enlisted trainee, a woman, not his wife? So government, as to Judge Hardy's point, government had to prove up all three of those.
Yes, Your Honor, they did. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, you were saying it, you were characterizing it in such a way that it was merely the kiss. And what I was asking was that, well, no, the acts were that he acknowledged that she was a junior enlisted trainee, that she was a woman, not his wife, and that he kissed her cheeks and lips. And as you, in responding to Judge Hardy, said yes, they would have to prove up all three of those, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right.
And so I rely on Livingstone again, which talks about if the government is going to charge utilizing an Article 133 offense, and they so choose to utilize an enumerated offense, i.e., an offense somewhere in the UCMJ, 76 to 134, they must be able to prove every element of that particular.
Let me ask you a question here. It's kind of a follow-up to Judge Maggs and Judge Johnson's earlier questions on the issue of notice. Now, there's no objection in this case. So is the defense position that they were misled at trial, or they didn't know what to defend against? Which is it?
No, Your Honor, it was not necessarily being misled, and I think this goes back to your question as well, Judge Meggs, is that purely when we come out to the 10,000-foot view, as it were, that an extramarital kiss is not subject to criminal sanction. And acknowledge, Your Honor, that there was no objection at trial, so in that sense it was forfeited, and it puts us in a plain error.
Well, that's where I'm going with this, because yes, my next question would be, under plain error, the error, if any, must be plain and obvious. And if we're now, according to your position, making the argument that it's plain and obvious, why wouldn't it have been plain and obvious to defense counsel at trial? We don't have an ineffective assistance claim before us. I'm not suggesting counsel were ineffective, but if it was plain and obvious, if that's the argument now, I guess my question is, wouldn't they be plain and obvious at the trial?
Your Honor, I cannot speak for trial counsel. However, I would say that because this particular issue, it touches on the due process clause and it touches on the Constitution, the plain error analysis, I believe under ROCA, and then when we're talking about 133 specifically, Livingstone, and I believe the Navy's case in Nelson also talks about this, when we're looking at the specific act that the government chooses to charge under 133, acknowledging no objection at trial, those cases have said that if it's a fair notice issue, that the objection is forfeited. And so when this court looks at it, again, going back to those cases, we're looking at the specific act and whether or not that would be plain error. In this case, Your Honor, because the extramarital kiss in and of itself is not prescribed by any statute or regulation.
Well, let me ask you this. In the context of an ineffectiveness claim, defense counsel is generally asked to provide an affidavit about her decision for not raising certain issues, say an issue like this. That suggests that defense counsel could, in fact, have a reason for not raising an issue like this, doesn't it?
It could, Your Honor.
But we don't know because of that. We don't have any such claim before us.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right. So you see what my problem is?
I do, Your Honor.
All right.
I wish I had a better answer and I could get in the mind of the trial defense counsel, Your Honor. But utilizing the...
And you're not suggesting defense counsel is ineffective, I don't think.
We have not made that claim, Your Honor.
All right.
But going back to the test in Rocha, when we're looking at this, and if it implicates the fair notice doctrine and the due process clause, Your Honor, because it's talking about the specific act under 133, appellant's position is that the error is plain and obvious in this case because the specific act itself was not forbidden and subject to.
Let me beat my other horse. He's not quite dead yet on this issue of ineffectiveness. What if defense counsel had been asked, why didn't you raise this? And she said, well, we have a specific reason. It was tactical. We didn't think it was a real winner, or we wanted to devote the point of our argument toward the more serious offense, and we were hoping that if the members found the more serious offense not proven, that they would find this one not proved. What if that was the defense counsel's claim?
Well, I think my job would be made a bit tougher, Your Honor. However, because this is a constitutional issue, whether or not they raised it at trial, the appellant's position still is that he was not on fair notice.
But the whole thing about notice is that you're claiming that if you're at the trial level, hey, I can't determine what I should defend against because of this specification, how it's drafted, what it's charging. I can't proceed with an adequate defense. I mean, this record seems to suggest they did proceed with a pretty adequate defense and, in fact, I would say a laudable effort. Would you not?
Yes, Your Honor. It was a well-litigated trial.
Yeah. Okay.
Counsel, may I ask one question? What if the specification, instead of having the last six words say he kissed her cheek and lips, said, he went drinking with her at a bar. Would that be a proper specification?
Your Honor, I see my time is up. My answer.
Please proceed.
It certainly could be, Your Honor. And an appellant is not suggesting that the fraternization portion is necessarily a default. However, because the government chose to utilize language that incorporated both fraternization and extramarital, and
it doesn't really incorporate extramarital activity because, for example, in the president's description of extramarital conduct, it doesn't involve kissing.
Precisely, Your Honor.
And it doesn't involve drinking.
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to figure out then how we're involving one of these specifications when kissing isn't part of it. I mean, your argument is, well, because kissing isn't part of it, then it can't be an offense. But drinking isn't part of it. I mean, how are we going to state a rule on how to write one of these charges?
Yes, Your Honor. If I may, in two parts, Your Honor. One, the first part is that the language taken in this charge directly mirrors that of the extramarital sexual conduct portions. And that's the a married man, which is directly from that, as well as a woman, not his wife. Again, directly from that offense. And so the rule that Your Honor might be getting after is if trial counsel are drafting these charge sheets, that if they are going to utilize an enumerated offense, for instance, the fraternization offense, that they can't then use the grab bag approach and take elements from other offenses and amalgamate them into this singular offense because, precisely in this case, appellant would not be on fair notice as to which exact part of that specification he'd have to defend against.
But you said he would be on fair notice if it said the exact same language, a woman not his wife, and he went drinking with her at a bar.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear the woman not his wife language. Oh, apologies, Your Honor. I thought you were talking about a fraternization purely.
Well, suppose so just the last six words are changed. Instead of he kissed her on the lips and cheek, it says he went drinking with her at a bar. So a woman not his wife, he went drinking with her at a bar.
Oh, okay, I understand what you're saying. Apologies, Your Honor. Yes, we would be in the same instance here because going drinking with her is not an act – that is forbidden by the extramarital sexual conduct portion of Article 134.
And so that would sort of preempt that kind of fraternization charge.
If the government utilized that extramarital language, it's not necessarily preempting, Your Honor, as much as amalgamating the two. And because of that, the specific act, appellant would not be on fair notice.
Further questions? Thank you, Captain Creighton. Captain Nguyen.
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. I'm Captain V. Nguyen, and together with my co-counsel, Colonel Richard Greeney, we represent the United States.
Captain Nguyen, you want to speak up a little bit?
Oh, yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Before I get to my roadmap, I'd like to address some of the questions that Your Honor has asked.
Captain Nguyen, if you could just move that microphone, kind of straighten out the arm of it.
Okay.
There we go. Thank you.
Is this better? Okay. First, with respect to the government's theory of the case, we can see on JA 83 where the government provides their theory is that this conduct was done with the knowledge of both the appellant's status as well as the trainee's status. That's also found again on the opening and closing statements, which is not in the joint appendix, but it's found on the record in 201 to 202 and 775 to 76. 781 and 800. Second, to Your Honor's question about whether this cannot just be, whether we can rely on just the language, the specification alone to find notice, the answer is no, because with an offense such as Article 133, the context is what matters. The case law as well provides that there may be some acts that viewed in isolation may be proper, but we always must look to see what is the context of the to determine propriety. In this case, the context was not merely a photograph kiss prompted by a photographer in some socially acceptable situation. Instead, on this night, the appellant was still on active duty. He met these trainees. They told him his status. He showed them his common access card to explain and hold himself out to be an active duty lieutenant colonel. And they told him that they had just graduated basic training. Then he told them that he was an instructor. Then he also shared with them his own basic graduation story, and then led to drinking and kissing and flirting in two different establishments and ultimately in this photographed kiss. And so the context in this case is what's most important in evaluating the notice. To the third question on whether this needs to be listed, as this court found in U.S. v. Ashby, the offense need not be explicitly listed. In Ashby, there was the finding that this was an obstruction of, there was sufficient notice for obstruction of a criminal investigation, including a foreign investigation. Furthermore, there are two types of conduct that may fall under Article 133, those that are specifically listed and ones that are not specifically listed. Arguably, ones which are listed in multiple places throughout the MCM as well as the Army regulations would provide greater notice to the appellant. Turning now to my roadmap. The presidentially enumerated elements and accompanying explanations provide fair notice that an extramarital kiss between an officer and junior enlisted trainee under the circumstances in this case was prohibited. The gravamen of this offense is that the officer's conduct disgraces the officer personally or brings dishonor to the military profession or the officer rank and himself personally. The conduct need not constitute another offense to satisfy the notice requirements of Article 133, but the sources of notice can include analogous prohibited conduct, such as fraternization. Article 133's purpose is different. The military is by necessity a specialized society separate from civilian society. In a disciplined and obedient fighting force, a military officer holds a particular position of responsibility. And over 130 years ago, the Supreme Court upheld the Congress's authority to prohibit private or unofficial conduct of an officer, which compromised that person's standing as an officer and brought scandal or reproach upon the service. Article 133 incorporates notice of fair warning or fair notice or warning through its enumerated elements as well as its explanations. The examples include acts of dishonesty, deceit, and indecorum. When we look to the sources of analogous offenses, here at trial, what's most fair is that the parties agree the most analogous offense is fraternization. But there were also elements as well with respect to trainees and with respect to extramarital conduct. That is true. When we look to the MCM for fraternization, we see that Article 134 has been an offense in the MCM since 1984. Case law provides as well that there is no question that this is a custom of the service. The Army has been consistent even from 1952 that this custom exists, and it has not been eroded in our service. In particular, the regulation that applies in appellant's case is Army Regulation 600-20 Command Policy, that soldiers of different grades must be cognizant their interactions do not create an actual or clearly predictable perception of undue familiarity between an officer and enlisted soldier. All relationships between soldiers of different grades are prohibited if they appear to compromise the integrity of supervisory authority or perceived or exploitative in nature or create a clearly predictable adverse impact on discipline, authority, or the ability of the command to accomplish its mission. Here, appellant's conduct was in front of another trainee who testified at this court. There's also a reasonable and fair inference that it occurred in the eyesight of other trainees who sat at the table with the trainee in question. Ultimately, intimate relationships, including an extramarital kiss, are prohibited. If this court would like to see as well other, to take judicial notice of other regulations with respect to the trainee-instructor relationship, it's available on JA-177. That's also part of AR-600-20. The standard is whether a reasonable officer would be aware that their conduct would risk bringing disrepute upon himself and the profession, and a reasonable senior field grade officer would have no doubt that kissing an E-1 junior enlisted trainee who was not his wife on the lips constituted conduct unbecoming. As in Ashby, common sense supports the conclusion that he was on notice that his conduct violated the UCMJ. Appellant attained a battalion command rank. He was entrusted, essentially, to lead a formation of 700 soldiers. And here he's claiming that he did not have the proper discernment to understand whether he was on notice. After 29 years in the Army as an enlisted soldier, a commander, and a senior field grade officer, there is no question that appellant knew kissing an E-1 junior enlisted trainee who was not his wife was forbidden and subject to criminal sanction.
Captain Nguyen, rather than relying on common sense, which, as notwithstanding its name, is not as common as purported, maybe, but why do we have to – well, let me ask this a different question. The focus seems to be on the wording of the statute and when someone is supposed to have notice. And so defense counsel's position, appellate defense counsel's position is that, no, you need notice by just looking at it. And if you can't look at it, no matter what context, no matter when you're looking at it, you can't look at it and tell what the defendant was charged with and what he should have been able to defend against, then that's a lack of notice. That's a constitutional deprivation. Do you agree with that kind of theory that when you have to have notice is when you look at the charge sheet, and even if you don't have notice, defense counsel, there's kind of this general concept, well, you know, generally someone doesn't have notice by looking at this particular specification. Wait, you see what I'm getting at here? I might be mischaracterizing defense counsel's position, and he can correct me on when he returns, but you see what I'm struggling with?
Yes, Your Honor. For purposes of the notice in this case, the answer would be no. However, if there is any confusion with respect to the way that the specification is written, then there is a solution, and that is requesting a bill of particulars. And that was not required in this case because it was plain to all who was, I believe it was plain to all the
parties. When you say not required, you mean even if he had requested a bill of particulars, he might not have been granted one?
Without doing the analysis on my own, perhaps not. It would not be necessary, Your Honor. No.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from the court? This court should affirm.
Any questions? Thank you, Captain Nguyen. Captain Craig.
Your Honors, government conceded in both their brief and here in front of you that standing alone, an extramarital kiss would not likely meet the elements of the underlying offense here, Article 133. And that is true. An extramarital kiss is not violative of any enumerated offense nor any custom or regulation of the service. To Your Honor's point, that is appellate counsel's position. And that is because in Livingstone, and I'm quoting now, the plain and obvious error, despite objection, is because there is insufficient notice that the underlying conduct constituted a specific offense. And in this case, the extramarital kiss in and of itself does not constitute a specific offense under either the UCMJ.
So you reject, Captain Creighton, you reject the notion that with respect to officer misconduct charged in Article 133 that you needn't be concerned about the circumstances. It's only what is alleged expressly in the specification. Is that what you're saying?
Your Honor, I rely on Livingstone, which says that if the government, when charging, chooses to utilize an enumerated offense, and in this case they chose both fraternization and extramarital, that they are beholden to those particular elements. And in this case, if they're so beholden to the fraternization portion, that's what they would have to charge, Your Honor. And so they could have charged the act as violative of a custom or regulation or a known status. They could have used that language, Your Honor, but they chose an enumerated offense type language. And so they were stuck with that particular language. And as such, because an extramarital kiss is not violative of any of those enumerated offenses, appellant was not on notice.
But you're saying that just because they didn't charge that it was prohibited by custom or tradition or something, that cannot be considered by the members when they themselves, officers in the Army, are evaluating and determining whether the accused is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt? They can't consider that?
That's correct, Your Honor, and that is what this court has said in Livingstone when it affirmed the Coast Guard's case, mm-hmm. that the specific underlying offense is what is the conduct that must be unbecoming. It's not the context that surrounds it. In that case, it was the messaging of a fellow Coast Guard cadet, and in it, essentially extortion. Mm-hmm. But the Coast Guard, and affirmed by this court, said the act of messaging in and of itself was not conduct that was unbecoming. In this case, an extramarital kiss.
But didn't you have to consider the circumstances in Livingstone? It's not just an abstraction, is it?
I think to your question.
I mean, by definition, don't you have to consider the circumstances under which the conduct was committed in any 133 offense?
When we're talking about fair notice, though, Your Honor, no, the context is not. We're looking at the language of the charge itself. And in this case, because the extramarital language was utilized throughout it, and the grab bag approach does not put appellant on fair notice.
Mm. Okay.
Chief,
please.
Counsel, does appellant agree that his conduct violated Army Regulation 600-20?
Your Honor, so 600-20, it could have, Your Honor. There is not a specific portion of 600-20 that says a kiss in and of itself is violative. There is a portion when it talks about trainer-trainee relationships, and that does mention a kiss. But in terms of whether an officer can or can't, a kiss is not mentioned.
Well, if I think it was the government's position that his conduct did or would have violated 600-20. Does anything prohibit the government from saying fraternization by an officer is bad, fraternization by a married officer is worse? Right? They're trying to prove Article 133, they have to prove conduct unbecoming. So, you know, and the language around conduct unbecoming is kind of severe, right? And so, you know, they have to prove that this was really bad behavior. Does anything prevent them from making that argument, including by including that he's not married to the E1 in the specification that says fraternization is bad, married fraternization is worse, in their efforts to prove conduct unbecoming?
I think there is a world, absolutely, Your Honor, where they could utilize aggravation evidence or wording. However, in this case, because they didn't charge it as an Article 92 offense where it violated an Army regulation, i.e. 600-20, they charged it as the judge essentially cornered them in before instructions and said, government, what is your theory? And they said fraternization. Under Article 134, yes, Your Honor, and that's on JA 146. And
counsel, in all fairness, he went back and corrected himself. Trial counsel did go back and correct himself on that 134 offense.
He did, yes. But he originally said it could be violative of this, and then he corrected himself. Absolutely, Your Honor, yes. The point being, Your Honor, is that because they utilized the fraternization portion under Article 134, they were married to that particular charge, and they could not bring in elements of another charge, extramarital sexual conduct in this. That doesn't make it aggravation. That makes it two separate offenses, and we simply could not know what the panel would have relied on to make it, whether it was aggravating or whether they found it to be an element of the crime.
Okay. And the other thing I want to ask is, in the explanation for 133, it says, this article prohibits conduct by a commissioned officer taking all of the circumstances into consideration is thus compromising, meaning compromising his status as an officer. Is the fact that he's married not part of taking all the circumstances into consideration?
It could be, Your Honor. I'm not suggesting otherwise. However, because we are not at what the panel would use to contextualize this, to Judge Meg's question, we are pre-trial. We are looking at the charging language itself. We are not looking – appellant is not able, before trial even starts, to understand the government's own theory of the case. And so it purely is the charging language itself. And because they utilize the extramarital language, he is not on fair notice of that.
You may briefly sum up.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Because appellant was not on fair notice that an extramarital kiss was forbidden and subject to criminal sanction, we ask this Court to set aside the findings. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Creighton. Case is now submitted. The Court thanks counsel for both sides, and the Court will stand adjourned until further order of the Court.
All right. Court stands adjourned until further order of the court.